Thank you, Joe. Okay, so we talked about some of our next steps and the people we were going to pray for last time, the neighbors we were going to pray for. Hi, Kat. Anybody, how did it go? Anybody have any experience with it? Good job. That's outstanding. Way to go. Very good. You know, I had that police officer who lives in our neighborhood that I just cannot connect with. And I told you I was, you know, that was part of my mission for the week was to do it. We drove out Wednesday morning early to go to Columbia to go to one of our grandkids was graduating from boot camp up in Fort Jackson in Columbia, South Carolina. We were leaving early, and Ken was there. He was loading his car up, and it was a step in the right direction. I didn't stop. I should have, but I did slow and wave, and this time he actually waved back and smiled. So that's a step in the right direction. But we continue to pray for him, and we're going to find a way. I did have a substitute, which I'll tell you about when we get just a little further on. Okay, so, you know, remember that, you know, we're going to, you know, each week we're going to do the next step, what our next step's going to be, and let's try to do it in the people that we're going to pray for. I think that's probably the easier part. One thing, let's get this out. I'll be right. In fact, would you do this for me?
Sure.
Get these. These are refrigerator magnets that Jimmy got us with an image of our paper on. It's going to last longer, and so we can use that. All right, so I think what we'll do is we'll, let's see, let me do this. Watch today's video.
Do you ever feel like you're just behind? Like there's not enough time in the day to get everything you want to get done? Sometimes this is called the tyranny of the urgent. There's always things pressing against you. Like, how many emails do you have waiting in your inbox right now that you need to reply to? How many phone calls do you need to make? How many people are waiting for you to call them back on something? Like, somebody's birthday is coming up, right? You have to buy them a gift. You have to send them a note. How about your house, where you live right now? How's the garage look? Is it clean? Is it organized? I'm sure there's a closet or two that could use some organizing, or clothes that you need to sort out. Have you talked to your mother lately? How's your career path looking? Are you lining up things for training? Have you been working out lately? Are you eating right? Do you have a plan to change? Fill in the blank. See, we are all running around with our heads chopped off, trying to keep up with all the things that we're supposed to be doing. And this gets inside of us. It doesn't just live outside of us, inside of us. And the writer John Ortberg calls this a hurry sickness. It's a busyness that's infecting you from the inside out. And when we think about becoming great neighbors and taking the great commandment literally and seriously, the greatest obstacle to us being great neighbors and obeying the great commandment is time. We don't seem to have enough of it, and we can't get more of it. So what do we do? How do we manage this? I mean, how do we move into the kind of people that we want to be as we follow Jesus? Well, it's pretty simple. We have to choose to prioritize what God says is most important. To love him with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love our neighbor as ourself. C.S. Lewis says that it's really only busy people that are lazy people, because while you leave the hard work of prioritizing to others, you allow urgent things to crowd out important things. The challenge is to take responsibility for prioritizing your own life. Anyone that's ever packed a car for a vacation knows this, right? You remember this as a kid, you're getting ready to go on a big camping trip, big car trip, and you know the dad usually stands in the driveway and says, don't put anything in the car. No one put anything in the car. Just lay everything out in the driveway, and then I'll organize everything, right? Because if you do that right, you know, there's a win to this. There's a moment when you pack everything in the car and you know you've won. When do you know you've won? When you get in the car and there's clearance, you can still see out the rearview mirror. Win, right? If you just let everyone start heaping everything in the car, it all just jumbles together and you get half as much in, because priority determines capacity. When you're packing the car, you put the most important things in first, and you have to prioritize how those things go in. When Jesus says what's most important is to love God with everything you have and love your neighbor as yourself, that's something we have to put in first. And our life begins to work when we trust what God says is important is what we put in first. The greatest obstacle to you becoming the neighbor that God is calling you to be, the greatest obstacle is prioritizing by way of your time.
So, anybody come up with a big takeaway from this week's reading or the video? It was an interesting reading. I mean, time is the great villain that we've got. Absolutely. You've got to be visible. You've got to be available. And there's all kinds of, you know, there's all kinds of ways to do that. Mary Kay gave me our paper, you know, that we've been keeping. And in it was a little note that was it in our mailbox or on our doorstep, Mary Kay? But it was and so, you know, and what it said was, you know, and it's interesting. Dear neighbor, my name is Robin, and I'm trying to make our city better. I'm looking for donations of men's clean, gently worn clothing suitable for a job interview. I'll take them to a local shelter. If you can help, please bag or box them and leave them on my front porch at her address. And please, no fanfare. This is not about me. Thank you, Robin. You know, that was a great thing to do. Now, she didn't meet us, and you know, and the truth is we don't have a relationship, but it is a you know, it's another way of getting to meet your neighbors. I think the thing that, you know, the big takeaway for me from the reading was that, remember that it said Jesus was the healthiest person ever. He was never in a hurry. But he always made time for people who needed him. And And that, obviously, he's our model. And those are, that's the, you know, that's what we need to be. You know, we need to be watching the, you know, our hurry up mentality. Because if, you know, if we don't, we're going to have a problem. When we got back Friday from South Carolina, just, you know, something just made me do this. We've got I hadn't even unloaded the car. I was walking to the mailbox to get the mail and noticed we have a neighbor across the street that I don't know or didn't know. And he is always, he bought the house a couple years ago. He is working like mad. Every time I see him, he's doing something. A lot of yard. He's just, and so I just walked over there and introduced myself, and I said, I got to tell you, you're the hardest working guy in the neighborhood. And I said, I'm just jealous at all the things you can do. He introduced himself. I know now that he is a home inspector. He's, you know, he likes doing things like that. But you know, we're not strangers anymore. And so we got to make ourselves available when the opportunity comes, or, you know, or we're going to miss it. And he's a neat guy on top of that. So I think that's great. All right, so the story of Mary and Martha is an interesting, you know, it's an interesting reading. So, do you associate more with Mary or with Martha?
Sometimes both.
Yeah. If you were going to defend Martha in that moment, what would you say?
Things have to be done. Some things have to be done.
Yeah, they do.
If you're cooking a meal, you can't leave the kitchen.
Yeah, but yet Mary, for whatever reason, knew that the important thing was to be at Jesus' feet. Do you think there's good news for Martha?
Is there good news?
For
yes.
Martha?
Yes, there is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there is. I mean, here it is. We know that Martha was chided and corrected and probably embarrassed and offended and hurt and confused by the Lord's response. But we know from the scriptures that she grew. She grew so close to the Lord and learned to be such a good listener to the Spirit that it was Martha who came running to Jesus when he came to their village after the death of Lazarus. And Jesus goes on to tell Martha that I'm the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live, and everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? And she said, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who's coming into the world. That's an amazing growth spurt for Martha. Back at the supper, she really didn't even know that her sardine souffle wasn't the main event. She just didn't. Now she's come to such freedom and understanding that she's declared that Jesus is the Messiah before he brings her brother's stinky corpse back to life. I mean, think about it. That's something to really be amazed about.
Well, this writer points out that in their society, that was Martha's place in the kitchen and taking care of the house, that it was an unusual situation that Mary
right.
Was even sitting there at Christ's
feet. Absolutely. That's right. No question.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, there's always things to be done. But we'll talk about this again. Sometimes, I don't know what would have happened with dinner, but my guess is if Martha had gone and sat at Jesus' feet with Mary, I'm willing to bet dinner would have been provided. I may be wrong, but I don't think so. But it didn't mean Martha was a bad person. She was doing what she had been taught to do, and she was working hard. But sometimes you gotta give up the good for the great. Just the way it is. Yes, ma'am.
I did my lesson this morning. This was true.
And I really do believe that in today's world, the choices are even harder. Because, I mean, the truth is, in those days, women were taking care of the home. It was about being, you know, barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. It just was. Today, you got to be barefoot, pregnant in the kitchen and hold a full-time job, too. And take care of that family. Very difficult, but it is about, you know, kind of for the great. And I think the other things I liked was the myths. Imagine that. Things will settle down someday, right? More will be enough. And everybody lives like this. I have told myself this all the time. It's absolutely right. And I know you have too, haven't you? The truth is, things won't settle down someday. More's never enough. There's always something else. And everybody doesn't have to live like this. Any thoughts about those myths?
I always think that things will settle down someday. But I watch Carol, and you know, she's like retired and she's super busy all the time, so maybe it doesn't happen.
Yeah, and you know, I'm just this perfect example of it. You know, listen. I'm 76 years old, and I'm really blessed. I mean, you know, I've got loads of energy, you know, play tennis a couple times a week, have a client in South Georgia I go to every week, own a background checking company, which keeps me going. And I do it for a couple reasons. I do it because I'm not ready to attack our retirement funds yet, if I can avoid it. And I do it because I really love the game of business. I just do. I like being around people. I like talking to people. But the more I study this, the more I'm not sure that this isn't part of giving up, giving up the good that needs to be done for the great. Because I know there's some things that are really important that I don't get to do. And it's really, really getting to me. Any other comments on the myths? Yes, ma'am.
One of the things too, and we help take care of our parents as they age and got older.
Right.
And my mother was an amazing woman, but in her 80s, she said, "You need to do the things that are most important now." Because when you're in your 80s, you don't have the energy to do the things that you want to do.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I'm finding that out.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, we do, you know, we just don't have all the energy we had earlier on. And we do have to figure out what the grade is and what's really important. So which of the three myths do you struggle with most? Anybody wanna?
Things will settle down someday.
Yeah, I think that's me too. I mean, I really don't believe that everybody lives like this. I think a lot of people do, but I don't. You know, I think there are people who have figured out you don't have to do this.
I kind of think that on the second one, I wonder sometimes myself, is why can't I enjoy the things that I have and spend time with them instead of going and getting something else? So the matter of when is it enough with a human being, it's never enough. You know, it's like the thing is, too much is enough.
You're absolutely right. And the truth is, we're not taking it with us, right?
It's also with interests. Like, I like to have a lot of different interests and go from things to thing.
Yep.
But then you don't really master something by spreading yourself too thin. And if you have interests that you enjoy, why are you constantly looking for something like the Greeks were looking for something new to hear? We look for something new to be doing.
Yeah. No, we do. I agree with that. When I was thinking about that very thing, and I'm thinking how I'm in a maybe at a slower pace, I'm like Elijah, our grandson, who in the space of 3 minutes will want to fish, will want to play basketball, will want to play football, will want to on and on. And I don't do it quite at that frenetic a pace, but
we'd be better off if we knew how to find out what we are both good at and what we like doing.
Yep.
Pretty much go with that.
Yeah, I agree with that. So there is a solution for this. There's the one truth. Everybody has the same amount of time. And it's all about about the quadrant you choose to operate in. And for those of you who are cubby heads and have done the 7 habits of highly effective people, see that, you know, cubby gives us, you know, the quadrants are urgent and important, urgent and not important, not urgent and important, and not urgent and not important. And our real goal is not to live in that first quadrant of urgent and important. Urgent and important is our crises. They're the things that we have let get out of control. Wait until 5 minutes before class to read the stuff and get ready for class. That's minor. It's pressing problems where what you really want to spend your time on is that second quadrant, not urgent and important. It's planning, and it's relationship building, and it's doing all the things you need to do so that they don't move into the first quadrant. Because the first quadrant's bad. I mean, it just is. With a lot of my consulting clients, you know, I've seen them, they live in quadrant one. And that's why their decision-making really struggles. They don't have time to make a good decision. They're just constantly, they're on this treadmill. But this is that quadrant two is where you want to live. Very important. If we're really going to use our time right. So imagine yourself with the time it would take to be a great neighbor. What are the things you'd have to sacrifice to make that a reality? That's first. Yeah. What would you have to give up, though?
Maybe some of the trivia things, our internet, our TVs.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, Facebook is a, you know, it's wonderful because you can keep up with people, but it is a time stealer. Just is. And you know, and it just says that everything, there's got to be a fine line drawn. It doesn't say Facebook's evil or a tool of the devil or anything like that. It just says use it appropriately and do the, you know, get the important, the really important and not urgent things done.
We distance ourselves by using those tools.
Oh, yeah.
Because we... can communicate, but we can be separate in the communication if we don't want to respond or we want to respond. But if you're face to face with someone or anything and talking, you get more of a sense of how they feel, how they respond to your communication.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's right on. I, you know, in my background checking business, I get leads through different ways, LinkedIn, I have a lead service, but invariably, my process calls for me to be able to talk to the person that is interested. I have to have a personal connection with them. I would like to do a video conference, but I'll take a phone call. But you'd be amazed at how many people will say, "Well, can't you just send me something? I don't like talking to people." And they're afraid to make themselves vulnerable. They may learn something that will make them change something that they're doing. But it is interesting. Anything else we'd have to give up? So, but let's say we've done it now. Well, what could change your life or your neighborhood if you did give up these things? What would change? How would it look?
You have a lot greater sense of community. I mean, however you define community, whether it's a block, houses on either side of you.
Whatever. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really believe, or I wouldn't be wasting your time with this. I believe two things. We know Jesus is a genius. And he said, this is really, really important. And number two, I believe that if just our group here gets out and becomes good neighbors, gets to know, really know their neighbors, not, drive away. It does some amazing things. It has the potential to create some wonderful things happening in your neighborhoods. Think of 15 or 20 different neighborhoods, great things going on in. Maybe a block party, maybe dinners with your neighbors, actually getting to know them, be able to help them, let them help you. It changes people's lives. So I'm hoping you're doing this. Um, So, you know, Dave shared about his, the tension they had that he felt when making a decision about which sports league to enroll his son in. So as you consider the issue of margin, and for those of you who didn't get to read it, it was about his son was a pretty good ball player. He would like him to, and sports was really important to Dave, was one of the authors, and he really wanted his son to succeed. But he knew in order to do that, he'd have to enroll him in one of those traveling leagues, which meant he didn't have time for anything else. They're going to be on the road, traveling, practice, whatever. And he opted not to do that. He decided he was going to give up, and, you know, making his son a great athlete was a good thing. But he decided to give up something good for something that was great, which was all about being a neighbor, being involved in church, doing all the things that he knew he should do. So as you consider the issue of margin in your life, what could you say no to today in order to spend more time in your neighborhood?
Nobody wants to give up anything.
I mean, it's hard, Joe. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. What do you give up? I struggle with it. I know that, you know, I've got to give up some of the time that I spend at work. Just do. That's what it's going to take. And, you know, am I big enough to do that? I don't know. We'll see. But it is important. And maybe you do it in stages. I have told my client in South Georgia that next year, in addition to working once a month from home for a week, I'm going to take a week off and do not work for him, because he's got to replace me. I mean, before I begin to drool. So it's really important. Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. I feel much better now. I really feel better. Ellen, what were you going
to
say?
It might not be that way. There's, you have to give up things. It's just our priorities. Just try to reorganize a little bit.
Maybe so.
Be a little more efficient with their organization.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. And there you go. way to go. See, we've already got two give-ups. I appreciate that. This is a tough, the time barrier is a really tough subject. Yes. Right. Absolutely. I mean, I know it's doable. Jesus wouldn't have told us to do it if it wasn't. That's the truth.
Miss Sandy.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
One good way of meeting people in your neighborhood is a garage sale or a yard sale. You get a lot of people from the neighborhood come in, and you get to know people because you start talking to them. And then you say, oh, I live right down the street here, or find out people's names. You'd be surprised how much you gain from that.
Right. There's no question about that. Now, once you do this, it's really important. And you're whether it's a garage sale, whether it's a block party, a covered dish dinner, whatever it is, once you've done this, you can't retreat. You've got to be available for those people. Mary Kay was telling me the other day that there's a lady who is in our quadrant, if you will, who has around the clock care. We know there's something wrong with her, and so we weren't sure what it was, and I happened to be talking to her next door neighbor who does a lot of, he helps her a lot. He's a great guy. And she has a combination, she has cancer, she has multiple cirrhosis, and she has OCD issues. And, you know, and here we are, you know, we want to get to know her, but when we do that, she's going to have very real needs that we're going to need to tend to. And so before we take that step, we've got to recognize that it's true. And obviously, Jesus intends for us to do that. Yes, sir, Ernest.